So, how would you characterize the last year and a half, broadly speaking?
See, initially there were many things that reminded me of the immediate aftermath of the disaster. It was this uncertainty. You did not know what is it that could potentially affect you. It was basically not having information on how you can get in and what is likely to happen to you. So one that I saw a lot. I also saw how the system basically breaks down, what I had seen in the immediate aftermath of the disaster, how the healthcare system essentially becomes useless for a large number of people because there's just no access in times of crisis. And so there were many, many things that were there, and yet there were things that were new. And this was that how one, that the pandemic was being described or being talked about by in official channels. There was one channel of communication where maybe some scientific data played a role. But in terms of how it was being discussed in society, in particularly in the society of the underprivileged and dispossessed, was in terms of seeing this as a yet another attack by the state machinery. And this was particularly deeply felt and responded in their own ways by the most marginalized, in particular in Bhopal, among the Muslims, who initially did not believe that there was a pandemic. There was indeed a virus that was affecting people. They believed that it was some story that the government had just, the ruling party had just cooked up. And this was particularly so because in Madhya Pradesh, how the Tablighis were targeted, and they just went, I think, overboard with it. And that is what possibly elicited this response from. So these are some of the things. And just like the last comparison was just like the disaster, it also showed society in its true light. I mean, getting off the all the verbiage. And what was very clear is those who had money and access to power are the ones who had a better chance in life of survival in life, survival and health. So having said that, we thought that once news started coming, so from January onwards, we had in our among our staff, we had an active discussion. And it was interesting because a lot of the science was just emerging. And we decided that because we have been working in the communities that is settled right in the close proximity to the abandoned Union Carbide factory, and we have had a active community health work going on for last more than 20 years. The clinic's been running for 25 years now, and for almost 24 years we have had our health workers working in the about in a population of between 30 and 40,000 in close to in an area which is about within 2.5 kilometers of the factory. So, but because we had this long record of having worked in the community, because we had close to more than 100 community health volunteers who were people who community health workers, seven of them from the clinic, had identified and trained and equipped. So they had equipment that they could use, and who actually have been working almost 75% of them were active for more than 5 years, and a sizable number active for more than 10 years, just giving their work, volunteering in the work of community health. So the first thing we did was, after the community health workers did work on a plan, and was that we started, this was only a very brief sketchy plan, but it was finalized through the participation of community health volunteers from all the communities that people had been working in, which is close to 20 communities. And what was decided was that we had to do, one was awareness. We had to see that people do everything they can to protect themselves and to protect others, as well as we were guessing on testing. We're trying to promote as much as testing as possible. Overall, through messaging through different means, we used posters, pamphlets, large banners. And what was among the best things that happened during the course of from March to almost till August, September, that this work went on, and even beyond, but this was beyond the intense period, things went on a much more slower scale. I don't think at any point did what happened nationally. We never at any point let the guard down, particularly among the community health volunteers. And so we're to somewhat able to respond to the in the second wave as well. And we were able to, in the first wave, while the official records showed that there were nearly 7 times more COVID mortality in the gas-affected population, most possibly because they had too many gas-affected people, also had diabetes and hypertension. And of course, a lot of them had damaged lungs, a lot of them had chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. And they had also, as was documented by Dr. Neil Anderson from London School of Hygiene and Tropical Medicine, the damage to the immune system of the survivors was severe. And that is the reason that the Indian Council of Medical Research found 3 to 4 times more rate of tuberculosis among the gas affected compared to anywhere else in the country. And so despite that, our community health workers and particularly the health volunteers were able to show that through this kind of mainly community-based work in terms of spreading awareness, responding to people who had issues, including mental health issues, did impact a lot. We could show from official reports that in the Thana areas where our health workers, health volunteers were active, the infection rate was lower than anywhere else. More people got tested in these areas. And I think in the first wave, there were only 2 deaths in this entire population. So we are now gearing up for a more like with the understanding that it is not going to be just yet one other wave, but that we have to be prepared for a series of waves. So we are thinking of talking of now in more permanent terms. And one of the things that have come very starkly in this second wave was that the underprivileged had absolutely no access to, particularly to tertiary care or even secondary care, because private hospitals, which is their first choice, were too expensive, and government facilities were just not possible. The scale of the problem can be seen is at times almost 30% of the entire beds that occupancy would be just by relatives of the staff alone. So what in preparing for future waves, so to speak, one of the things that we are sharing with the communities, particularly where we work, is that what you need to be prepared to for a situation where basically there's no government health care. So, and what could people do with support from outside, with support from donors, experts willing to help support remotely or whatever. But essentially, for many, and it is not something new, that not some revelation that we are making, but for many, the people know that when it comes to well before peaking, there will not be any healthcare or any kind of response that one can even expect.
From a medical point of view, do you see similarities? Yes. Also, you talked about the response to COVID, which you said reminded you of what happened after the gas disaster. But medically also, given the fact that COVID is a respiratory illness, what are the
similarities
you see?
One was the completely rampant, just reminded me of the disaster, completely rampant and unregulated use of drugs that could not be supported scientifically. So there was the way things went, became mad about remdesivir or the use of some of the most antibiotics like meropenem, group of antibiotics, it was rampant. Every hospital was doing this. Antibiotics that had no sense than use of steroids from the first day onwards. So, and just like Bhopal, it was the treatment was part of the problem. That not only the uncertainty part, but also the damage, the actual damage that was being caused to people. So there were many, many prescriptions that I've seen with people who have come out from private hospitals. Thankfully, those were among the people who came out alive. And it was like that they survived, not because of the cocktail of the completely crazy cocktail of antibiotics, but that they came out of this treatment because they were lucky. Corona was not the problem for them.
In terms of responding to the actual issue of COVID patients, lower oxygen levels and other impacts of COVID, what kind of strategies you think from the experience of dealing with post-gas disaster patients? Do you see any similarity in strategies that can be fruitfully employed? You know?
Yeah, I think what we have learned in Bhopal, that a lot of improvement in your lung function can be through pranayama. This we have seen in more than 10,000 people who have gone through this in the Sambhavna clinic. So we think both for in terms of post-COVID and long COVID, it is one of the things that should be done on a broad, much broader scale. And this was, in fact, one of the suggestions of one advisor, Dr. Vijayan, who's also chairperson of Sambhavna Trust, was that what should happen is mass scale. What Sambhavna is trying to do should be happening in a mass scale of people learning pranayama, people with lung problems, chronic lung problems. And there, I think that we should... We are doing it in our small ways, but this should be done on a much larger scale by the government healthcare system for dedicated to the healthcare of the survivors.
Now, in terms of oxygen support, for example, I suspect people with or you can start by just describing what you think are going to be the problems ahead. In the context of people who have recovered, that is, they're negative, COVID negative, but what are the kind of continued problems they're going to have? What are you seeing?
What we are seeing now is, like I'm saying, very extremely, some small percentage of extremely complicated problems. People who have more multisystemic problems. A friend of mine who he's not a gas victim, but he was affected with COVID. But now the treatment he's had again is also some symptomatic, but the investigations he had shows that he has neurological problems that have neurological injuries that are irreversible. So it is because we do not know, we have no information on long COVID. It's just anecdotal. So I would say that we have another very complex, very, again, another area where wrong medicines are going to cause potentially much more damage than the problem itself. But there is one that is cooking as we speak.
We saw in the national capital and other parts of northern India in particular, tremendous shortage of oxygen, which was very essential for saving lives right at the start of the second wave. But what occurs to me is that oxygen was always something that was probably critical for, in the pre-COVID period, for people with tuberculosis or COPD or babies with pneumonia. Oh. And I suppose even gas victims, you know, who all had respiratory mm-hmm. problems. So I'm just wondering if we had been a country which had spent some more resources on providing oxygen to all the people who really needed it before COVID, we would have been better prepared.
No doubt. But here in Bhopal, for a gas victim to go get oxygen, they would have to be they have to be very lucky to start with. And then they would have to be under tertiary care. And where again, not very easy to get that. So yeah, there's nothing there in place. So what we have, that is why people like Dr. Vijayan did talk less on oxygen and more on what people could do themselves. He had already come to that realization. So even now, at least us, when we are thinking of trying to provide care to as many people as possible near the community itself, we are in fact thinking of what could be done without oxygen, or just with what could be done with just oxygen concentrators. Because the fact is that it will not be available.
Mm. Not available because of resources not being enough, or rather no investment in this.
Not available because of it. Because practically speaking, the poor will not get it.
So we're back to square one in the sense that constantly a bulk of the population is left to fend for itself without any state support of any kind, you know, or support from anywhere else.
Yeah, it is the reality made more striking just as the disaster did.
What else has the pandemic precipitated? I mean, one of the things that COVID response watch we are looking at is how existing trends in Indian society have been amplified by the pandemic. Like this issue of neglect of a very vast majority of people's health needs, you know, for years, decades. So I remember you mentioned in one of our earlier conversations about the caste issues or different communities being affected in different ways. You could elaborate on that.
Yeah, what was very, very stark was the way the pandemic was seen by the Muslims in Madhya Pradesh, around in Bhopal or in other places similar. And in the beginning, when there was testing going on, the Muslims were so scared that they would run away. They would just hide or run away. And because they were thinking, and that was also to support some of their fears, there were state actions that actually would, it would take a tiny leap of imagination to go where they were going. Because anyone found positive, there would be barricades made and there would be end to surveillance. So people were very scared. That was the first thing that happened. And second, and people were very scared that if they found anyone positive, if they tested and found anyone positive, then the entire family would be taken away. And in some parts, and quite significant parts of the community, the word spread was they would, in fact, take you away and kill you off so that you don't spread the disease. And the what was interesting was people actually believed that the government could do that with the Muslims. And just watching TV for a week could prepare anyone for that kind of thing, what happens on TV. So that was the one thing that we had to deal with. Now in the vaccine also, they are worried that it is something to do with to finish Muslims. So we see, in reality, we see that the vaccine acceptance is quite different in the in different communities. And that was a sad part that that everyone in the, every Muslim in the community could really believe that such horrible stuff would be done. They were saying that in the first wave that they would catch us, test us, and then throw us in the tabelis. These are gaushalas, and that is where they will end up among bullshit, among gober.
Yeah. Oh, this is something that we see also in the Adivasi belt, and even in places like Tamil Nadu, among the poorer rural populations, people are petrified of getting tested because of not exactly the same like what you described, but they're afraid of the costs involved, the harshness of the quarantining, the stigma.
No, in this case, it was very clear that they knew, I think that is also part of very stark reality. They knew that they were dispensable and that they would be dispensed with in these cruel manners. Yeah. Expendable.
So that is still playing a role in vaccine hesitancy, you're saying?
Yeah.
There's a mistrust or distrust of the government and all state agencies of all kinds.
Yeah. And that is reflected in everything. That is reflected in safety. I mean, the reason people wear, we are having so much difficulty in making people wear, is because the police is telling them to do the same thing, except it is doing with a stick. So people wear, and so the people wear masks that are a joke. They don't do anything. And what it mask, because the mask is not supposed to protect them from virus, it's protect them from getting beaten up by the cops.
So in that sense, from your experience of working with in the post Bhopal gas context, how do you see this interplay of politics and medicine? How much of is it about good science and access to facilities? How much is it about these other social realities?
I think it is just like in the Bhopal case, it is both. See, because whether the vaccines that are getting, I mean, the vaccine that was tested, I mean, this is incidental but important, that one survivor of the disaster actually died during the trial. Yeah. And the number of people who had very many adverse events, including several, at least a week of illness, none of this got recorded. This is among the survivors themselves who have seen that. So that there is a very powerful reason for vaccine hesitancy. But yet, because even now, if people are taking the vaccine, it is not an... it is also because of the pressure that they see themselves under, and the fact is, the more it is, there will be repression. Already there are news of what would be denied if you're not vaccinated. I think this is just going to become counterproductive. It may work for some, but then it is going to just cause just encourage the fakeries that we have already seen in giving vaccines. So there will be papers generated or certificates generated that people will buy. The point is that just as every person, that most of us are on the same place, that most of us, whatever information is generated is very little information. We know nothing. So I think people have to be told that this is what it is, that it is not that we know vaccine is safe, but then they can take a decision. But when we try to downplay the negative impacts and just try to say nothing is going to happen, they know that something is going to happen. So that is what we are going to try to see another way of communicating, because right now we have a diverse population to work with. There are some communities in which majority are Muslim, some communities where majorities are Hindus. And the vaccination has just begun. So we'll see how it goes.